This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
Good morning. The time right now is 8:11. The temperature outside is holding at 62 degrees this morning. And our guests include Mike Nunley and Randy White, who are with the Rutherford County Emergency Medical Services team here in Rutherford County. Good morning. How are y'all doing today?
Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
So what is the Rutherford County Emergency Medical Service team, and how long has it been part of our community?
Actually, we started in the ambulance service in 1972 on October the 15th, so we're nearing our 40th birthday.
Wow, 40 years, and it's part of the county. That's a long time.
It is a long time.
With that kind of history, you've got to have some good stories.
Yeah, we've got some great stories. I'm not sure we can tell them on the radio, though. Mike's actually been the director of the ambulance service for that long also. So,
wow.
You know, he's got a lot more than I do. I've only been here 33 years. He's been here 40. So
that's amazing. I mean, that long at one place. What a great thing.
It is, and it's a great place to work, and you know, it takes, you know, people who do this kind of work, it takes a special kind of person to do this kind of work anyway, and it takes somebody with basically a service to others, and if they have that dedication and service to others, you know, you can retire from here. It's a great place.
So, Mike, when you started, what was it that you were doing?
Actually, Rutherford County was unique when they started their ambulance service because whereas most communities were going with either contracted ambulance services or fire department-based ambulance services, Rutherford County entered into a unique agreement with Rutherford Hospital, which was Rutherford Hospital at that time. And so it was a joint effort between the hospital and Rutherford County. Basically, the hospital provided the personnel and Rutherford County provided the equipment. And we started the ambulance services on October 15th, 1972. It's been a long journey, but it doesn't seem to me like it's been 40 years, but it has.
So prior to this establishment, were the funeral homes being used to I guess, carry people to and from the hospital?
The local funeral homes provided ambulance service prior to that. There was Jennings and Ayers and Woodfins and Scales and Kilgo. Funeral homes all provided ambulance services. Actually, what happened was the federal government passed some regulations for ambulances and training of ambulance personnel, and the funeral homes just felt like it was going to be too costly to meet those requirements, so they decided that they would go out of the ambulance service business. But I want everyone to know that they were very, very helpful in getting us established and helpful with initial problems that we had and so forth.
So I'm guessing some of the requirements were that the person being on the ambulance had to know first aid.
That's true. You know, there was no regulations prior to that, and technically you could make an ambulance call with nobody even in the back of the ambulance. You could go pick someone up and take them to the hospital without having an attendant, so to speak. But they addressed the vehicle equipment sizes and the equipment that was to be carried on the ambulances, as well as the training for the medics.
And what kinds of instruments were first required years back? What kinds of things do they have on them?
Various splints for all of the extremities, backboards, airway type stuff with resuscitators, ambu bags, and then trauma stuff, dressings and bandages and those kind of things.
One of the big things that they really touted at that time was that we carried oxygen. And, you know, obviously that's we do today. But when that was one of the big things is we carry oxygen. Now we carry so many other things. Technology has played a big role. You know, the cardiac heart monitors that we carry do so many different things. And they measure so many different outputs for patients. And you know, they measure the oxygen saturation. They measure the amount of CO2 that someone is putting out and, you know, those types of things. So basically, you know, technology has kind of run emergency medical services over the past 25, 30 years. And as that technology increases, then, you know, we pick up those things. And so it's kind of really neat to look back and see these signs plastered across ambulances that says, we carry oxygen now. So it's come a long way.
Now, I'm curious, do ambulances carry things like pain medicines for those who are injured in automobile accident? Do they carry stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They we carry several different kinds of drugs, and each one of the paramedics have to go through several certifications to be able to give those kinds of drugs. And so we do carry pain medication. We carry cardiac arrhythmia drugs. We carry, drugs, if you anti-emetic drugs where, you know, if you're sick at your stomach, we can take care of that. And we carry a wide variety of things. Back when the ambulance, one of the reasons that the ambulance service first started, you know, the reason that the federal government stepped in was because of the highway interstate system and how people were basically, you know, wrecking on the interstate and dying in front of people. And so that's when the Department of Transportation actually stepped in, and that's who does our curriculum even today, is the Department of Transportation. And they stepped in and they said, we need trained people. We need people that can go out there and do that. So it was surrounded by trauma. But now we take care of probably more medical things than we do even trauma.
I read a statistic lately that the majority of persons who walk into an emergency room, they're there because of abdominal pain. Is that also true with ambulance calls?
I don't think that would be the majority for us, Scott, but... We do see, we do see our share of abdominal pain.
I guess that's one of those pretty common ailments that everybody can have, and I guess that's why the statistic was so high.
It is, and the you know, with us, and you have to understand, people call ambulances for certain reasons, you know, and one of the reasons that we're glad we're here is because we can you know, about 67% of all chest pains go in by ambulance, and it should be actually 97% that go in by ambulance, because we can do so much more for them. When we show up on the scene, we basically carry an emergency room with us. We carry trained personnel. We're in constant contact with the physicians and staff at the emergency room, and we can actually transmit your EKG to the hospital, and the cardiologist will get that prior to arrival and be waiting for us at the hospital. So there's a lot of things that you know, that we can do, that basically if you just put somebody in a car, you wouldn't be able to do those things. It would delay treatment because of the fact that we can get there, you know, so quickly and treat them on the way there, and we can have cardiologists waiting by the time we get to the hospital. So it's a really, you know, it's kind of a joint effort between medical services at the hospitals and, you know, medical services, you know, on scene. And so it's, you know, as far as abdominal pain and things like that, those are things that we answer all the time. But our most common probably is, you know, just people who just don't feel well, who know something is wrong, and when we get there, we can diagnose those things and get them to the appropriate facility and the appropriate doctor to take care of them.
Are the persons you're usually picking up people who are home alone, or are they maybe a wife who calls in for the husband? How does that usually work on the average case?
Ideally, someone would be with a person. We would like that, because our dispatch also has the capability of giving instructions on how to take care of things over the telephone before the ambulance actually arrives. But to answer your question, our calls are broken down into about 50% medical and about 50% trauma, usually motor vehicle accident related, not necessarily that, but most of the time. And usually there's somebody that at least witnesses it. You know, if you think about it, in order for us to be notified, we have to have somebody who witnessed the accident in order to place the call.
Very true. And once you get on the scene, I guess that's when you first start addressing, well, here's what needs to be done and how it's going to be done. I bet that's difficult. I mean, it's chaos.
Well, our guys, you understand that they continually go through training. In fact, that's you know, the job that Mike Nunley has given me is the training aspect of it. And they continually go through training, and they're highly trained to begin with anyway. They have to go through emergency medical technician school, and that's where they learn to start IVs and assess patients and, you know, splint patients and do those things. And then they get further education in the paramedic programs throughout the state. And that's where they learn basically, you know, the way I compare it is the EMT school just kind of puts the foundation down, puts the walls up, the roof on, you know, puts the outside on. And the paramedic schools put the sheetrock in, the electricity, the plumbing, and everything else that make it a home. And so what you're doing is you're taking highly skilled, highly trained personnel and continually training those people to find out what's wrong with patients. And those things continually change. I mean, like I said, technology, you know, has a big role about how we take care of people. But the big thing is people take care of people. And that's what we're so proud of with our folks, is the fact that, you know, they have compassion and they care about other people. And that's one of the things that we look for when we hire folks.
Our guests today are Mike Nunley, the director of the Rutherford County Emergency Medical Services Company here in town, and Randy White. Again, these are it's part of our county. County government, I guess, pays for everything involved with this program. But it's been here since, you say, since 1970 what?
1972.
Since 1972. I guess the other closest, oldest thing to that would be the fire department and the police department. Is that about right?
And the sheriff's department.
And the sheriff's department. I forgot about that. How many years of training does the average paramedic go through before they can actually be on the ambulance?
Well, the local school here is done through MTSU for the emergency medical technician. That's, you know, that's basically about 350 hours or so. It lasts about 9.5 months. It's a part-time program. They go 2 days a week, 3 hours a day, or they can do a Friday, Saturday class. So it takes about 9.5 months to get through that program, and then it takes almost 2 years to go through the paramedic program. So they have about 3 years invested in, you know, becoming a paramedic from the time they start. Now, in Tennessee, in Rutherford County, what we do is we have paramedics and EMTs working side by side. The EMTs get experience to be paramedics later on, and then the paramedics take charge of the patient and take care of all the major activity that goes on with the patient. So EMTs and paramedics work together here in Rutherford County, but they eventually will all go to school and become paramedics. So you could have a couple of years experience as an EMT, which is what we suggest, and then move your way into a paramedic program and then become a paramedic later on.
Is the driver also highly trained, or is the driver just a driver?
Well, the driver, we don't have drivers in an emergency service because when we get on the scene, there's only two of us anyway a lot of times. Out in the county where we are, there's only two of us. And
right.
So both of you have to be highly medical trained. And so that's why we have an EMT paramedic team, rather than just a driver. There are some convalescent services and some non-emergent services that hire drivers, but they just drive, and that's all they're allowed to do. They're not allowed to take care of patients. The state of Tennessee won't let them do that, and so the EMT or the paramedic has to take care of the patient.
And what are the big differences between an EMT and a paramedic?
I think basically it's just training. Probably the simplest way to describe what a paramedic has in addition to EMT training is they're very well versed in homeostasis, which basically means they know what the body is supposed to be doing and why. Because anytime something disrupts that, then that becomes a diagnosis, basically. And so in order for you to be able to do that diagnosis, you have to know how it was supposed to be in the first place.
Sounds good. Right now the time is 8:25. Our guests today, Mike Nunley and Randy White with the Rutherford County Emergency Medical Services team here in town. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a minute. Again, the time, 8:25. We'll check on the weather in just a second.
We got some good neighbors, and we like bragging on them. Nominate a good neighbor every day. Put it in writing on WTNS. AM, FM, online.
Hello, this is Lisa Halliburton from Bell Jewelers. At Bell Jewelers, we buy directly from our diamond source in Israel. Our long-standing relationship with our diamond cutter means we get to select from the best offerings first and pass the savings on to our customers. There's nothing like the sparkle of a Bell Jewelers diamond. Stop in soon and see for yourself.
Visit Bell Jewelers on Broad, across from Toots.
Weather Eye.
Plenty of sunshine across the forecast area for today with a high in the mid-80s. We'll have a south-southwest wind between 5 and 10 miles per hour. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Thaluber.
Currently 68.
You get all the extras without paying extra at Demas Restaurant.
Every entree we have comes with a choice of a side dish and a soup or salad and bread. It's a complete meal for the one price.
Jim Demas at Demas Restaurant.
Consistency is one of the key ingredients that we have. We've got comment cards on each table. We address those issues right away.
Eat with a family who truly appreciate your business. Demas Restaurant.
If your oil is leaking and your brakes are squeaking, call 896-1407. Roberts Discount Auto Repair. Service you can trust. On Broad Street, across from Ford of Murfreesboro. Honest service, fair prices.
Good morning. We have no accidents or incidents reported in Murfreesboro at this time by the Murfreesboro Police. Old Fort Parkway at Bridge Avenue, Old Fort Parkway at Chapin Place, Old Fort Parkway at Casey Lane, all with traffic easing just a bit. I-24 at 96, I-24 at 231, I-24 at Medical Center Parkway with traffic easing a bit. Broad at Church, Broad at Memorial, traffic easing there also. National Flight Training offers affordable flight instruction from FAA-certified instructors who work on your schedule at your pace within your budget. Call National Flight Training at 366-9192 or go online to nationalflighttraining.com. I'm Randy O'Brien with traffic on WGNS.
That update brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Introducing Progressive's exclusive Snapshot Discount, a program that tracks your good driving and rewards it with discounts. Find out more at progressive.com. Again, that's progressive.com. Right now the time, 8:28. You're tuned to WGNS, and we appreciate you tuning in. You can also listen online at WGNSradio.com. Our guests today are Mike Nunley. He is the director of the Rutherford County Emergency Medical Services. And also Randy White is with us today. I'm curious, is there a certain area of town where you get more calls than other areas?
Actually, we do track our calls according to commissioner's districts. And the area that gets most of the calls is right here where we are.
In the downtown area.
In the downtown area. We have an ambulance at Burton Street. That's our busiest ambulance. It covers all the way to Middle Tennessee Boulevard, back to Broad Street. We have an ambulance at MTSU. They're also a very busy ambulance. And then we have one on Old Salem Road. Those three make up our busiest ambulances at the ambulance service. So you can say that most of our calls happen right here.
So the one at MTSU, obviously they're transporting a lot of MTSU students on a monthly basis, I guess?
Actually, they do transport MTSU students when they need to, but the majority of their calls actually come from on the other side of Rutherford Boulevard.
So those neighborhoods over there.
Right. Yeah.
And they have a huge zone. I mean, it's a lot of zone out there, so they end up getting a lot of calls all over the place, MTSU and on out into the other part of the zone.
Let's say you have a call out in Christiana, which is a pretty good ways out. Who goes to that?
We have an ambulance that's stationed on the River Road in Christiana.
How about that?
Wow, that's good. And do you have somebody spending the night at each of these stations? Is it like a fire department shift?
Yeah, all of our personnel are on the street. Personnel work 24 hours on, and then they're off for 48. So, we're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So I'm curious, what set this idea of saying 24 on, 48 off? How long has that been in place? What made that happen?
We originally, when we started the ambulance service, we were working 8-hour shifts because that's what the hospital worked. And as I said earlier, Rutherford County took the position of taking hospital personnel and training them how to drive an ambulance rather than going the other way. So historically, we were working 8-hour shifts. And at some point in time, we just made the decision that it would be more economical to go to 24, 48 shifts. And we started that in about 1980 or 81.
Can a person work two 24-hour shifts back to back?
We don't encourage that. And the reason it is because we don't know, you know, from one hour to the next whether we're going to be called out or not. So we don't encourage that to happen because of the fact that we don't know how much downtime that medic is going to get. We don't know how much. So we don't really encourage that to happen. It does occasionally happen. But we make sure that they get plenty of downtime when they're you know, not making ambulance calls.
Is there an average number of calls per ambulance station? I mean, are they busy all night long, or is there a lot of downtime?
Burton Street Ambulance, MTSU Ambulance, Salem Road Ambulance, and Smyrna Central Ambulance are pretty well busy all the time. If you work one of those shifts or one of those stations, then you're the type of person that likes to be busy because you're going to be busy. On the other hand, our ambulance in Eagleville and the one on Manchester Road and the one in Christiana don't make as many calls.
So you could be up all night long, easily.
Oh, absolutely. You know, some of these ambulances, you know, on busy days are making 25 calls. And,
wow.
You know, so, you know, in the thing about our business, it's the same as any emergency service, you know, whether it be fire, police, or EMS. You don't know when the next call is coming, so you always got to be ready. And you know, you can sleep at work, but it's not the same kind of sleep, because at any time those bells can go off and you're gone, and you have to go from 0 to 60 really quick as far as your brain is going. And so, you know, it's a good shift, but it can get pretty rough if you've been busy all day long. So, you know, that's why we don't encourage those 48s.
How many people and how many vehicles do you have at each station each night?
Each of our stations has an ambulance station there. Most of our stations have a backup ambulance there. The Salem Road station is actually it's kind of our center of operations, and we have two or three different ambulances operating out of there at all times. Plus, they have the reserved ambulances there as well.
We have 12 ambulance stations throughout the county, and we also have a special operations center over on Fortress. And at each one of those stations, there is either two paramedics or an EMT and a paramedic. So they're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So those stations are covered all the time. So, you know, that's, and then of course during the day, especially during the day, when we had the tornado back in Easter, mm-hmm. And we had the tornado, we actually put 9 additional ambulances on the street in less than 30 minutes. And the reason is because basically, you know, that was a holiday and all of us were off. But within 30 minutes, we had 9 additional ambulances on the street. Mike was there, I was there, several of us we came in on the day off to, you know, to take care of the folks that were out there. Thank goodness there weren't many injuries, but we had, you know, the 13 ambulances that we normally run every day, plus 9 additional ambulances on the street for that particular disaster.
How long does it take you to get to a typical call?
Our average response time last month was 7.2 minutes.
Is that pretty good compared to other areas? I don't know what
excellent.
To compare it to.
It's excellent.
It's excellent compared to other areas, but it still is not as good as we would like for it to be. Our goal has always been to have a 6-minute response time.
Yeah.
And I guess in the future, more ambulances will be purchased, more stations will be built as our community grows.
I think you're right. You know, for instance, Burton Street is the busiest ambulance we have, but they also have the smallest zone of any of our ambulances, and their average response time last month was 5.5 minutes.
Wow, that's pretty quick.
And
it is
quick.
Yeah, it is very quick, but understand that, as you know, if we're making a lot of calls per month, you know, then those ambulance response times are going to increase also. And so, you know, you're looking at kind of a trade-off. You know, how many ambulances are you going to put out there, and where are you going to put those ambulances? And, of course, we do studies that with statistical analysis, and the Office of Information Technology helps us out with that, and all of those other kind of things about where we're going to put the next ambulance. So when we do add an ambulance on, there's a lot of statistical information backing that decision up.
Well, it's interesting. So the person, the worker, may be laying in bed asleep. The alarm goes off. They've got to get out. Are they already dressed?
Most of the time, yeah. They have to be, because they have a certain amount of time to get out and in the ambulance before, you know, they get out there. So they're laying down basically in their clothes.
So it's just a nap.
That's exactly right.
It's not a sleep at all.
That's exactly right.
So they jump up, run out to the ambulance, and then take off.
That's correct.
I guess they have GPS units in every ambulance. I mean, because you can't know all the streets.
They have GPS, but they also have a very good dispatch behind them as well to guide them into the correct spot.
So dispatch is working with them, telling them exactly where to go, how to get there, the best route to take.
Yeah, and the dispatches, the dispatchers are basically work for Rutherford County EMS. So, you know, there are dispatchers, and so they understand, and they're medically trained also. They're emergency medical dispatchers, which is a state certification. And not all counties have that, and not all places have that, but we are fortunate that, you know, that we do. And so those guys can give, you know, pre-hospital or pre-ambulance, you know, directions about, you know, take an aspirin, you know, those types of things. And even prior to the arrival of the ambulance, you know, our dispatchers are basically giving directions over the telephone on how to take care of the patient.
And how many dispatchers do you have to have? Are they at a central location, or are they at the different centers?
We actually have the only dedicated dispatch center in the county, and that is located out behind the Rutherford County School Board. But the building was built especially to be a dispatch center. It is very well environmentally controlled and acoustically controlled. We have about 12 dispatchers, and then we have a cadre of part-time dispatchers that we can draw on whenever one of our regular dispatchers needs time off.
I've been to the dispatch center at the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. The lights are turned down low. Is it the same type of atmosphere for y'all?
Yes, it is. They're truly dispatch centers, and you know, there's been lots of study and going about how they need to be as far as the ambiance inside the dispatch center. Because, you know, these calls that the dispatchers take and the calls that the medics take, they're very, very stressful mentally and physically. You've got to create a situation so that those people can function in and know that they're going to be taken care of.
And you have to understand that a dispatcher is a unique person also in the fact that, you know, they know these guys. They know these people that work for us. And every time that they send these people out, they send them after possible, you know, harm. You know, they put them in harm's way, and they know that. And so they're kind of, you know, I want to know when I get there that everybody is safe and everybody is, you know, taken care of, and I can get them there to the patient so that they can take care of it. But understand that every time that an ambulance goes out, we're sending out people in harm's way.
Is the fire department the first responder in Rutherford County, or is it the sheriff's department?
Actually, in the city of Murfreesboro, the Murfreesboro Fire Department does first response calls. We're working on an agreement with the city of Smyrna to get that in place. And in the county, our volunteer fire departments take care of extrication, and we're beginning to look in along the lines of having them respond as first responders as well.
The Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Department, they do a great job for us on first response. They get out there usually about maybe 2 minutes prior to our arrival. You know, they have oxygen on board. They can do other, you know, different things that first responders can do. Like Mike said, Smyrna is working on a contract with us to do first response there, and Laverne also has expressed an interest in first response too. So, but out in the county right now, we're basically, it's us, and you know, if the sheriff's department is able to respond, they'll respond with us. But it's just our medics that are out there in the county taking care of people.
How often do you find yourself in a domestic violence situation where you're having to separate the parties? I mean, how do you go about doing that when there's not a sheriff's official there to help out?
We most of the time with domestic violence, we have law enforcement on the scene. If it's really bad, we will stage our ambulance away from the scene until law enforcement gets there, because we have just had too many times where our individuals got put in harm's way, and only as a result of a miracle they didn't get harmed on those type of cases. So we try to isolate those cases. We try to wait until the shooting stops until we go in.
You know, the thing about that is sometimes you get thrust into those situations, and you know, you don't know that it's a domestic violence until you actually get there and start, you know, sifting through and finding out what's going on. But in most cases, you know, we'll stand by while the scene is cleared, you know, those kinds of things going on. So, you know, it's just a question of, you know, have I been thrust into a situation, you know, that I can't get out of, and I'm going to have to react to those, you know, those things. And we are trained to do those things.
I'm sure it happens. So I mean, it's unavoidable.
It is. And you know, I can't overemphasize the fact that every time these guys hit the streets, they are put in harm's way. They are put in danger. And you don't know what's behind that door. And, you know, a police officer can tell you that the worst call that they can answer is a domestic violence, because there's a lot of emotion in it, and there could be weapons and, you know, those kinds of things. But, you know, it is a case of we're taking these guys that have this compassion to help other people, and we're putting them out there and hoping that they can find out what's going on safely, efficiently. And yes, it does happen. It does happen where you end up in a wrestling match, a tag team match, hopefully. But at the same time, I want you to understand that law enforcement is quick to be on the scene with us, and, you know, to help us in any way that they can, along with fire departments and anybody else that we call to. We have a really great working relationship with all the departments in the city and county.
Our guests today are Mike Nunley and Randy White. They are with the Rutherford County Emergency Medical Services here in town. We're going to take another short break. This will probably be our last break. Right now the time is 8:43. You're tuned to WGNS. A check on the weather also comes your way next.
We take you to the local games. We're WGNS. FM 100.5, FM 101.9, and AM 1450.
Are you 10 pounds overweight, 30, more? Those extra pounds are hurting the quality of your life, your relationships, and your health. Dynamic Medical Centers offers fast, effective, medically supervised weight loss programs. Patients routinely lose up to 30 pounds in their first 30 days, and our programs are easy to follow with no hunger, no surgery, and no trips to the gym. For a free weight loss consultation, call 455-0850, dynamicmedicalcenters.com.
WeatherEye.
Plenty of sunshine across the forecast area for today with a high in the mid-80s. We'll have a south-southwest wind between 5 and 10 miles per hour. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Fallhuber.
Currently 68.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with our family. You can find us at Northwest Broad Street, next to the bowling lane. We have a great selection of aquariums and products to keep them looking company ready. When you come see us, don't forget to visit our huge small animal department downstairs, where you will find a variety of friendly furry faces. We are Animal City, and you'll find us at 919 Northwest Broad Street, here in Murfreesboro, next to the bowling lane.
For years and years, I've been telling you about Bell Furniture. Perry Bell buys in trailer truckload quantities and passes the savings on to you. First quality name brand furniture about half price every day at Bell Furniture. I know you've heard about Jameson's Marriott mattress. It's half price at Bell Furniture. Save with Perry Bell and Linda Ferris at Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna. Does your home have foundation problems? Bricks cracking, doors sticking, basement walls bowing, floors uneven, or water problems? Where do you turn? What name do you know and trust? Call United Structural Systems at 227-2275. For over 17 years, United Structural Systems has stabilized, restored, and guaranteed over 5,800 homes and businesses in Middle Tennessee. We know that you, like our customers, want a restored home, a lifetime guarantee, and the peace of mind that United Structural Systems, a locally owned company, will be here for you. Call United Structural Systems today at 227-2275 or visit them on the web at usstn.com. United Structural Systems, known best for being better.
We'll guarantee our best. Call USS.
Want a greener, longer-lasting grass? Try 5-Star Fescue Blend Grass Seed and grow a lush, green lawn. 5-Star Fescue is a top-performing, long-lasting, cool-season grass that is time-tested for color and growing conditions in the South. If you have had trouble growing a lush, green lawn because of shade, drought, or the wrong grass, then 5-Star Fescue Blend Grass Seed is your answer.
Pick some up today at Martin's Home and Garden on Broad Street across from Demas's and ask for Joshua.
When severe weather strikes, we break in.
Our meteorologist
giving you an exclusive Weather Eye forecast on WGNS Murfreesboro.
And a good morning to you. The time right now is 8:46. Our guests today, Mike Nunley and Randy White with Rutherford County Emergency Medical Services. Ever get combative patients, people who don't want to be taken to the hospital?
Absolutely. And again, those are situations that you walk into. You know, when they call an ambulance, we figure they want us, you know, and that's not necessarily the case all the time. And so, when we get to the scene, we have to evaluate that very quickly. And, you know, depending on what, you know, because a lot of people have mental problems and health problems, you know, those types of things. And, you know, it's not their fault. And it's nothing personal. And our guys know that it's nothing personal. I mean, you know, they could be intoxicated and then the next day come back and apologize for the way that they acted. And so it's nothing personal, and our guys know that. And we, you know, we take care of the situation as it happens. We're pretty fluid in that situation. But, you know, those types of things happen all the time to us.
I can picture intoxicated individuals getting hurt fairly easily.
Oh, yes.
So you probably get a lot of calls with that.
Yeah, in fact, I would say well over 60-70% of our motor vehicle crashes involve some type of intoxication. And so, yeah, we definitely get into those all the time. College town, you know.
Do you ever hear the follow-ups on the story to find out if the person you took to the hospital was arrested?
Oh, yeah, all the time. We're unique in the fact that, and I guess it starts at the top down, because Mike has always said, look, if you need to stay at the hospital for a couple more minutes to find out how your patient has done, then that's okay. And so a lot of times we follow our patients as they progress through a system. We'll come in on our day off and ask about a patient, you know, how did they do, how did Mr. Smith do, and, you know, those types of things. And that's good for us because then we know what the outcome is. Did we do okay on the scene, you know, versus, you know, in the hospital, did they have a shorter hospital stay because of something that we did on the scene, or could I have done something differently, or, you know, those types of things. So we look at patient outcomes a lot. And so we're always consistently trying to do better for our patients. So, yeah, we follow our patients all the way through the system usually.
And I guess a lot of positive stories.
We do have a lot of positive stories. And just last week we had a lady that walked into the ambulance service station on Burton Street, and she had her grandchild with her, and she actually came to the Burton Street ambulance station because the two medics that were working that day were the same medics that picked up her grandchild, and because of them being able to recognize certain things with the child, we took the child directly to Vanderbilt, where it was discovered that he had some serious problems, but she credits the medics to saving his life. It was a very emotional meeting there.
Are the ambulance stations always open to the public?
They are. You know, we have to secure the stations, particularly when the ambulances are gone, because there's We don't want people just coming and walking through our stations without some guidance. But as long as our medics are there, sure, the public is welcome. They own the stations.
Is that also true at midnight?
Well, it is true at midnight, but, you know, we would like a little, you know, warning.
Some downtime.
That's exactly. We'll get up, but we like a little warning, you know, for our people to come in and say, okay, yeah, come on in and see us. Like Mike said, the people own the station. There are times that we do have to secure the station, and you know, stations are usually on lockdown, especially if there's nobody there. But we're also safe havens, you know, that we participate in the Safe Haven program. And so, you know, all of our ambulance stations, you know, participate in that. And so it is a public building. And, you know, even though the door may be locked, if you'll just give us a little heads up, we'll make sure that it gets unlocked for you.
Have some of the locations in Murfreesboro been used as safe haven spots before?
I don't think so. I don't, you know, that's a relatively new program, and so far I don't think we've had any children or anything left with us. But once again, that is a possibility, and we have the Safe Haven placards on all of our buildings.
And what does that mean for the community?
Safe Haven is designed so that if someone has a baby or a child that they can't take care of, they can bring it to us. Without fear of any type of recrimination, and then we'll make sure that the baby enters into the program as to where it's supposed to be. Also, we serve for people who are victims of domestic violence. If they have no place to go and they need shelter right now, they can come to any of our stations, and we'll make sure that they're taken care of as well.
And I'm sure this is definitely used in other cities. It just hadn't caught on yet here, but I'm sure it's widely used.
I don't think we've had it any incidents in Murfreesboro, but we did have one in the northern end of our county about a year ago.
What happened there?
It was just a case of basically a teenager had a baby that was she was not capable of taking care of, and she brought the baby to the ambulance service. We took the baby to the hospital and got it involved in the program.
And DCS and all that, I guess, took over from there.
Absolutely.
Interesting. And you say that's a program that is available at a lot of public buildings here in town, or is it just the ambulance service?
It's just the ambulance service as far as I know.
I think that there are a couple of the fire stations that are participating in that, but I don't know of any other. And the police department could be participating in it, but I'm not sure.
Any big changes coming up?
I don't know. You know, we're really struggling right now because of some issues that are going on in the center of our city. And what I mean by that is our Burton Street ambulance, as I said before, is our busiest ambulance. We wondered what would happen when the hospital moved from being our next door neighbor to out on Medical Center Parkway. And what we found out to happen is that our Burton Street ambulance, prior to that, they would take their patient to the hospital, but they'd still be in their zone. And so they could make calls right from the hospital. Now they're all the way across town, and so that leaves their zone basically vacant for a large amount of time, because remember, they make more calls than anyone else. And it just so happens that their backup is Salem Road and MTSU Station. So, and those are the second and third busiest ambulance services we have, so we've got all this shuffling of ambulances going on in the MTSU area, and MTSU zone, and the Burton Street zone, and the Salem Street zone. So we're going to have to look at that and see what we can do to give some relief there.
So you really need another ambulance station that can bounce back and forth between all three of those stations, I guess.
Boy, you hit the nail right on the head. We call that a support ambulance. The ambulance is basically, the idea behind the support ambulance is just to send it into a vacated zone, wherever it may be. And that way nothing, you know, if there's another call, they take the call.
How big of a budget do you have to make this work?
It would be the salaries for six people. It takes six people to operate the ambulance, and they need to have the equivalent of at least one other position, because these people have time off. And so in order to cover an ambulance 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you need about seven people. So the salaries would be the biggest thing, and that's a recurring thing. They don't need to have a station because they're a support team, so they're just going to basically be traveling all the time. The other costs would be relatively minor costs, the cost of keeping up the ambulance and the cost of fuel and those kind of things.
So they could actually be stationed at one of the three other locations.
Correct.
And that would work. So hopefully that'll happen, I guess, in the future. I guess the budget depends on that and how well our economy is doing.
Right, and our mayor has been working on that as well. We've had some discussions with the administration at the medical center, and they have some property there in that zone that could actually serve some purposes for us, and so we're kind of negotiating with them to see what we can do there.
And right now, you are taking patients to Middle Tennessee Medical Center, Stonecrest, and sometimes Vanderbilt?
Or any other hospital in Nashville that they need to go to, for instance, Centennial or Baptist or any of those hospitals.
Or even Heritage out of Bedford County or Williamson County Medical Center or any, we'll transport to any contiguous county where there's
who
a hospital.
Who chooses?
The patient. Now, in most cases, a patient would normally want to go to the closest hospital. And so that's what normally dictates, where we're going. But if you call us and say, hey, look, my doctor is at Williamson Medical Center, then we'll take you to Williamson Medical Center as long as you are stable enough to go to Williamson and not the closest hospital. We have protocols that work out that say, if the patient is so critical that they can't make it, then that kind of decision lies on you then. But if the patient is still insistent on going and you've given them the best medical advice that you can, then it's the patient's decision.
Is the patient paying for that trip to Nashville or trip to Williamson County?
We do have charges associated with the ambulances. We base our charges on what is allowable by Medicare. Most of the time, our bills are paid by insurance companies, whether they be medical, health-type insurances or automobile insurances. But it's always been the position of the county commission that those who use the service should pay more. It might interest you to note that by doing that, we have lowered the cost that the taxpayers actually have involved to less than 1 cent on the property tax rate.
Just 1 cent on the property tax rate?
Actually, it's 0.9.
And then the patient is the one who's picking up the cost for the mileage and the services that they are provided. The fire department doesn't do that. Only the ambulance
that's
does
correct.
That. Okay.
But the fire department doesn't transport.
That's very true. Do you foresee in the future the fire department ever charging for anything like that?
I don't know. We don't really have that type of a relationship with the fire department, and I don't know what they have in mind for that. It's allowable under certain conditions to be charged. We have a special operations response team at the ambulance service that we haven't mentioned, and they have some things that they do that we can charge for instance, like high angle rescue and those kind. You may remember not too long ago we had some people trapped on the water tower that eventually got torn down, but we got those people off of the water tower,
and they got a bill for it.
They did.
Our guests today have been Mike Nunley and Randy White with the Rutherford County Emergency Medical Services here in town. We appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
My pleasure, Scott. Thank you.
Right now the time is 8:59. Local news comes your way next on WGNS with Ron Jordan. Stay with us.
The Rams on the radio.
This is Jim Powell, and you're listening to Rutherford County's home of the Atlanta Braves, WGNS, Murfreesboro.